What that?
I kind of love the interview.
No, I cannot. Well, I tried to enjoy. We are trying our best to bring a lot of music clips, but a little hard time to finding the right one, or probably to finding the suitable one for our audience. So
I kind of feel like I got
for
that. Like this. So.
So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive Through HR. We are having a fun conversation over here with our wonderful, wonderful guest, Crystal Miller. So, stay tuned. If you have any questions, hit the hashtag DDHR on Twitter. We will be able to pull that up. And, you know, this link is available on our social media platforms. So, if you are listening to Drive Through HR, it's just a click away on our social media platforms. Or if you are traveling, listen to us on the go. Call to 347-996-5600. So without further ado, let's meet our guest, Crystal Miller. Welcome to the show. I mean, welcome back again.
Thank you. I kind of feel like this is a second home. It's kind of neat. Thanks for having me, though. I am happy to be here. I know this is the part where I do like the introduction and the who am I and why should you care about me kind of thing. So I guess I'm Crystal Miller, because you
have done a little bit of hosting over the shows, and today we have the pleasure to have you as a guest. So kick off, tell to our audience who you are and what you do. If there is anyone out there who doesn't know of you, let them get a hold of you.
There are plenty of people who don't know me, but I am Crystal Miller. I am on the internet pretty much everywhere as the one Crystal. It's like the only one you need to know. But that being said, I am a strategist with AT&T, and I also run a small digital agency called Brand Strategies with Carrie Corbin. And really what I do is I solve problems surrounding the meaning of work. So, you know, socially, that might look like we need to position a group of jobs or even a product or a company in a certain manner, and then I'll look at that and say, okay, well, what's the goal? What's the initiative? What are you trying to solve? Where does that need to go? How do we need to say that? What graphics might need to go with it? How do we tap into the audience? So a lot of what I do spans around marketing, which is really cool, but can be kind of confusing because I work in the world of HR for a good deal of the time, and you know, we don't see ourselves as marketing. We're HR and we're recruitment. And so there gets to be a little bit of a disconnect that I work with, which is great. It's fun, but it puts me, typically I've spent the majority of my year of being about a year, year and a half ahead of being employable. So I work as a consultant, and that's who I am and what I do.
Well, that's great. So from an HR role and turned into a marketing professional, and now you're a strategist helping companies build their brand, helping companies attract the right talent, which is great. So what's keeping you up at night these days?
So I'm so glad you asked me that, because for once there really is something keeping me up at night, and that is the conversation that we've been having over the last 2 years trying to convince recruitment that they're marketing, because recruiting is a marketing function. When you look at like what it's actually doing, you are trying to market your company and your jobs to people in the hopes that they will leave the job in the company that they're currently with and come work for you, for your jobs. That's a marketing function. But it sits in HR, so there's been a lot of education around that. Now we need to – we're making progress with that, and recruiters do see themselves as marketeers, but there's a little bit of a disconnect between – what kind of marketing they're doing and what's done in like talent attraction and employer branding. So you're seeing more and more transactional line recruiters, which have very important jobs, get a little confused with the employer branding space. And so they'll tell you that they're branding their company when in fact they're actually line recruiting, and you're not creating a brand, you're strengthening a brand that another department is creating. So I think this is probably something that needs to be explored a little bit. It's definitely keeping me up at night.
Right. So as you said, strategic and transactional, and people out there are a little more confused about what talent attraction really means. So if you can help them out, where is that confusion is happening? Where do these recruiters and especially the strategists in an organization get wrong when it comes to talent attraction?
So I don't know if it's so much a get it wrong as it is understanding when and how the functions, when and how each of these functions need to be employed and how they align and who does what, right? So from a talent attraction standpoint, when you look at like the employment branding campaigns that get done, creating the employer brand, the subsequent employer branding campaigns, the long-term marketing initiatives, that's talent attraction. So they're a slow burn sort of function and a discipline. So things that they're doing are going to be much higher level, high touch, strategic initiatives. Recruiters, the marketing that's done in recruitment marketing, which and you have two parts here, right? So you've got the recruitment marketing, which could be whole campaigns built around large-scale hiring initiatives, even job families where you know you're going to have a constant flow of requisitions around a job family or function. Those are more transactional and immediate in nature. So there's strategy behind it. It's not like there's not thought put behind how to do that. But it's a short-term, short-burn, high-fuse initiative. So that's going to have much more detail associated to it. That's really where the recruitment functions. So that's, just a high-level overview of the differences between the two. Where there starts to get, a little bit of an issue is when line recruiters aren't working in tandem with the people that are creating the talent attraction campaigns and the employer branding. Because what happens at that point, when they don't work together, when they don't work in tandem, the messages start to split. And then there starts to be some confusion. Like yesterday I was involved in a conversation on Twitter with Recruiting Animal and some of the people that listen to his show about the what recruiters are supposed to be doing. And so I had actually made a presentation at Illinois Sherm, and Dave Ryan tweeted something about how I said you need to speak geek if you're looking at creating tech talent. What I was really talking about was you need to understand the audience that you're trying to tap into, and you need to focus on their wants, their needs, and who they are, as opposed to constantly shouting, me, 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 look at my company, look at my job, because truthfully, we all care about ourselves and not the organization. So the problem is if a recruiter does that, then they run into an issue of they're not going to get their jobs filled, right? Because recruiters have to talk about the organization. They have to talk about the job. They have to share these job descriptions because otherwise how are they going to get the seat filled, right? It's kind of a thing. But on the other hand, recruitment marketers, like the people that are working in talent attraction, they have the ability to step back and say, all right, I need to talk about my company, but I need to talk about my company in a way that's going to be compelling enough that somebody who wasn't looking for a job today is going to see that they can fit in this space. It's almost like looking at a picture and you've got the little cutout of the person that you want there and figuring out, all right, now how do I get this person to want to put themselves in this slot? Does that make sense?
It absolutely does, Crystal, and I hope you're having a wonderful Friday afternoon.
I am. Hi, William.
All right. So I want to ask you a question about competition and get your take on it. And so think about this, and you probably have already given this considerable thought, but let's take Ruby Tuesdays and Applebee's. Do those folks compete for the same customer, and do they compete for the same talent in your mind?
Oh, certainly. They're both fast casual dining, so I would assume there would be quite a bit of overlap.
So their consumer message and their talent message, let's just separate, make the world that flat, right? So their consumer message goes to the same people and their talent message goes to the same people. If that's true, how do they differentiate?
So I think the differentiation there is really in what their company has to offer. And look, we'd all like to say that it's totally different to work for my company versus my competitor's company. And in reality, the day-to-day experience might be very, very similar. However, I think you can talk about, I mean, like with Applebee's specifically, you can talk about some of the fun things that they do, you know, that's organizationally, culturally different, and how that might appeal to someone in different levels. And really, at that point, to make it appealing to the individuals that they're trying to recruit, they need to think about, all right, so who's our target? Like, what's their demographics, and what kind of things are they interested in, and how can we share who we are hitting on those pillars of interest for the people that we're trying to attract? So that, okay, that might look like saying, like talking about career growth opportunities, or, you know, hey, we're not going to work you 80 hours a week, or I don't know. I mean, it's different for every company.
Yeah. So let's dig into that. The here's what we do is a message that's sent down from the mountaintop. Basically, someone was scripted this message, and here's our benefits package, our comp package, and here's how we're different. It's basically, it's a we message. And I want to get your thoughts on, what about the I message? What about those brands that say, yeah, we're not going to do the whole we stuff. We're going to let our folks tell you what it's like to work here, which is both a filter and an out, but it's a lot of I. What I do here at Applebee's, dot, 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 et cetera. What's your take on we versus I?
I think I is much more compelling. I think it fits into what is really a largely a me-centric society. I don't really care what we do. I care about how we will affect me. So if I'm hearing from individuals that work from a company, me their experience, right? That's going to be much more compelling for me. Now, there's always that little bit of, okay, well, this is still put out by the company, so there's a little bit of a marketing edge to it. Sure, fine, whatever. But there are a lot of studies that show that employee-generated content is much more believable by the audience, and it's a testimonial. Testimonials definitely carry more weight.
So we all agree that candidate experience is important. It's like breathing and blood in our veins, maybe not drinking and driving. So we all agree on the common sense elements of candidate experience. What are the three things, two things that are still going on with candidates that you're shocked about?
They're going on with candidates or going on with the treatment of candidates?
Oh, thank you. The treatment of candidates.
Really just that the biggest thing that shocks me is still how poor we are at communicating with candidates. It's so not that difficult to do. In fact, a large percentage of it can be automated, yet we take very little pains to communicate with people that we've taken quite a lot of pains and invested quite a lot of money in trying to attract. And the turnoff that that causes is just enormous. So when you look at when you're dating somebody, the best you're ever going to behave is during the dating phase. Can we agree on that?
Yes.
Okay. So as a company, I'm dating my candidates. I'm trying to get them excited about coming to work for me or marrying me, as it were, professionally. And yet I don't call up for dates. I don't tell them when I'm going to want to see them again. I just all of a sudden show up with a ring and say, marry me. And you're leaving them, the candidate, wondering, okay, is this person like ever going to put the toilet seat down, and I'm going to end up doing all of the laundry? This is not going to be a good relationship. This is not how this is supposed to work, and I'm shocked that it still does.
I like all kinds of innuendo, so I'm very, very comfortable in this conversation. Let me ask you, let's pivot real quick, because I want to ask you a volume question. So you've done a lot of hiring, you've interacted with a lot of recruiters. What's your take on recruiters that want a lot of people to apply to a job? Meaning, you know, the gals and the guys that are out there that want 10,000 applicants to a job versus 150 high-quality applicants to a job.
So I'm going to say something that's going to offend a lot of people, but that makes for fun radio, I guess. So I think that's really lazy. It's really, really lazy. And I don't, there's been a couple of people who've been able to say, okay, but here's why I want all of these people, because I don't really want to run job ads. If I can get 10,000 people to apply for this job, then I can sort them out and filter it and create this talent community that I can then go back and talk to these people. Yeah, okay, whatever. If that's actually the case, then I guess there's some thought behind that. Yay. But most of the time, it's that they don't want to actually have to actively recruit. And so if they can just basically throw a cattle call in there and go through enough resumes, they'll find people that'll work for them, and then There you go. But that doesn't mean they're finding the best people for the job. They're finding the best people that bothered to apply. So the best of the active. And that's kind of shortchanging the company you work for.
So is number of applicants, so what I want to get to, I believe the same things, by the way, so I don't think it's really that off base. I think it is laziness, but I want to get to a number. Is there an appropriate number, and above that number, something's not right in your filters, and below that number, something's not right in your filters. Like something's wrong with that. 1,000 people applying to your job is right, or 500 applying, high-quality people applying for your job is just right. Where's the porridge in the number for the people that apply? In your mind, could we agree on a number?
I'd love to say we could agree on a number. I think we can more or less agree on a this is absurd easier than we could agree on a this is a good number, because it's going to be different for every organization. There are many, especially in large organizations with well-developed brands, well-recognized brands. They're going to get a much higher number of applicants regardless of what they do, just because people want to come to work for them. But I don't think it's the number as much as it's the quality. However, that being said, I personally, when I've got like 10 really great applicants, I pretty much stop looking, or at least I did in my line recruiting days, because at that point, if I've got 10 really great applicants to choose from, why do I need to continue to get more? I mean, if I've done my job right and I have my job rec appropriate, like I've gotten the right number of qualifications, I know what they're looking for, I understand the team dynamics, I've presented that in a way that's really understandable to my audience, and I've got 10 people that fit all of that, why do I need to keep getting more people? Because if a hiring manager knocks out all 10, I'm probably not going to continue to take applicants. I'm going to go back to that hiring manager and try to figure out where the disconnect is. That's 10. And, you know, frequently I'll talk with companies who are pulling in 250 applicants and they're worried about not having enough. What are you doing?
Great. Yeah, that's true. So, everyone, let's do a quick shout out to our audience, those who are listening on Twitter or from our Facebook or any of our social media platforms. You are listening to Drive to HR, and this is Nisha and William talking to our wonderful, wonderful guest, Crystal Miller, who is a social media and digital strategist at AT&T. And we are talking more about talent attraction. So, Crystal, what are some innovative talent attraction strategies that you have seen companies are doing nowadays?
Innovative talent. So I think I really like some of the personalized things that are happening. I'm going to give a quick shout out to AT&T right now for their for the Me portal, right? So things that are personalizing information, AT&T and Me, Google it, it should come up. It's an emerging workforce portal for new grads, people that are just entering the workforce or coming back into the workforce after being out of it for a protracted period of time. They're able to use their social networks to basically set a few preferences. We don't go look at their profiles or anything like that, but that will allow the portal to personalize what kind of experience they're going to have. It'll have their name will show up on marketing collateral within that portal online, and they can answer some questions that will then give them information about AT&T that's relevant and interesting to them. So rather than just putting everything in goodness out on a career channel, I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't have those things, but we're saying, okay, yeah, we've got the career site. That's cool. Now, you can come to this portal and you can get answers to things like sustainability. If sustainability is important to you, you're asked a question like, what kind of car do you want to drive, a hybrid or a luxury vehicle? Actually, don't remember the vehicles, but something like that. And so depending on what you select, it'll give you information about growth opportunities or sustainability. It'll ask you, you know, is learning on a job more important to you or learning in a classroom? And based off of your answers, it'll tell you about the learning and development programs that are at AT&T. Stuff like that is really cool. I think that's, I don't know how innovative necessarily it is, but it's something that not a lot of companies are doing. It has a very positive response by the audience that it's directed towards. I also really like the stuff that Zappos did with holding chats online. I think it's a great thing. I mean, just being able to have an open forum where people know that they can ask a question. It doesn't really matter how many people participate. It's the fact that it's there. When I talk about earlier that one of my biggest gripes in our industry is lack of communication, anything that furthers communication I think is a good thing. So I enjoy that. I think that's a good thing. There's a lot of really neat things that are happening right now. Those are just a couple that come to mind.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, while we were talking about all those initiatives, it is actually a intentional, strategic campaign that these companies are doing, right? So we talk about talent attraction campaign. So what should be the typical length of a talent attraction campaign, and how often do these companies need to revisit whether they have taken the right steps and they have attracted the right market or right candidate pool and their messaging is the the correct one or not? So what do you recommend to your clients in order to have a strategic talent attraction campaign going on?
Okay, so there's a lot of, again, talent attraction is a pretty high-level term, right? So there's different answers for this depending on what level of attraction you're talking about. For overall employer brand, I typically recommend that that's refreshed every 2 to 3 years. Doesn't mean it has to be completely redone, but it needs to be updated to reflect what's going on in your company and the environment right now, because a lot can change in a couple of years for a company. Especially in some segments like construction, finance, this stuff like that, and technology, there's a lot of changes, and that can affect your workforce. So you want to make sure that that's up to date to who you are. On hiring initiatives with job functions, I think you can do like the ongoing talent, the long burn talent attraction campaigns. You can plan that for a calendar year, and you can do quarterly check-ins. But no matter, and then going down into recruitment, marketing, and hiring initiatives, I tend to like those to last no longer than 90 days. I think at 90 days, like, you probably need to do some refinement of your messaging because you should be significantly into the hiring initiative, like the hiring initiative that you're in. So you don't need to talk about the 200 people you need to hire or the 2,000 people you need to hire. Those numbers need to be updated and reflected so people can kind of understand where they're coming in at. That's my personal preference. Everyone's a little bit different.
All right, Crystal. You have about 7 minutes left. I'm going to give you a choice of three questions, and you can pick the one that you'd like to answer. So
okay.
Question number one, inside Zappos, your thoughts. Question number two, your favorite current hack. Question number three, things candidate do that piss you off. So take any of those three and run.
Okay. I'm actually going to go with door number one. Thank you. I really feel like I'm on The Price is Right. Inside Zappos, that was a really interesting campaign, doing away with job descriptions, doing away with open jobs on websites. I think for the right companies, a very small percentage of companies, that's going to be a very neat concept, and I'd like to see a few more companies adopt it, specifically ones that don't have applicant flow problems. Because, I mean, let's face it, when we're putting a job online and we're putting it on our website, it's kind of like advertising saying, please come apply. But there are several companies that you can apply to that and you are never seen, you are never heard from because their volume is just so large. So it's a waste, really, and it kind of jacks up the candidate experience because they've applied and they're expecting to hear something and they don't. So like, it's like a black hole. So the concept is a nice way to plug up the black hole. The execution of that campaign was interesting in that I don't think it was completely transparent to the problems that they had. They might have been better off saying, hey, we get it. Y'all don't like that you disappear. So to alleviate that, we are going to take away job postings, and here's how you can interact with our company. And I don't think it was quite messaged that way. But I like the concept. I think it's a good concept.
So I had one follow-up question we talked about talent attraction campaign a little bit. So what you are currently working with a bigger company like AT&T, and you are working with smaller companies that those are your clients. So how do you recommend them, or have you seen this talent attraction campaign to be outsourced to a different third party? So that it can be a little more Right. So what are some tips that you would like to give to those smaller companies who are preferably looking for outsourcing their talent attraction campaign?
So two things. One, find a partner that's going to fit what you're looking for. And this is kind of a personal pet peeve of mine, but something I even have to watch as a consultant. People don't hire me to be the external face of their company. So when they hire our agency, it's typically because that person within that company wants to do something innovative, something cool, something that they can build their reputation upon, right? So it kind of defeats the purpose if I'm running around everywhere in God saying, look at me, I'm creating so-and-so company's campaign. It's like stealing their thunder. So if you are one of those people that are trying to build a name for yourself and then having done some innovative things within your company, but you need a third party to help make that happen, make sure you're hiring someone that is cool with being in the background and giving you the credit for it. If you don't want to be known, and there are people that are like that too, they're like, dude, I don't need the credit, I just need the stuff to happen, then great. Find somebody that really wants to shout about the cool things they're doing for your company, because if they can get credit, they'll probably work that much harder. I don't know. That's just my personal opinion. Budgets are big. Like, be honest about your budget and what you can do, what you have, what your company is going to allow you to say, and what they won't. Like, you need to know the boundary lines, and you need to be able to communicate those to the agencies that you're working with or considering, because if you don't, what you could find out is that you could buy services or a relationship with a really expensive agency and then not be able to do anything, and that's just a waste of money.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So, yeah. So now we have about 3 minutes left at this point, Crystal. So what's the role of HR and marketing when it comes to talent attraction or building a talent attraction strategy? What's the role of HR and marketing when it comes to building the talent attraction strategy of the company?
So I think that the best thing that HR and marketing can possibly do is understand how they work well together. And HR is going to understand the dynamics of the workforce in a way that marketing does not. So being able to give the information, the pulse of the employees, where the company is headed from a meaning of work standpoint, that's very, very critical for HR to be able to give that information to marketing. Marketing, on the other hand, they're probably going to be better dialed into things like consumer and candidate behaviors, what from a psychology standpoint, how messages need to be positioned in order to be well heard, well received, and acted upon. They're going to probably have better access to creative. They're probably going to have better access to marketing channels and functions and relationships that will allow you to get more for the spend that you have. Let them do their work. Let them do those things. And they also, typically, marketing is really good about putting metrics behind that to be able to show you what you got for what you spent. If the two sides can work together and not worry so much about who owns what in the relationship, the company benefits from that. And at the end of the day, regardless of what department you sit in, your job is to further the company interests. So, you know, I think that, I guess, putting aside the, I don't know if it's ego or ownership, but whatever it is, put that aside so that your company can benefit.
Absolutely. So, Crystal, thank you so much for joining with us today and sharing your lunch time. I know you are traveling and you are taking a break for this 30 minutes to joining us on Drive Through HR. Thank you so much for your thoughtful insights. And where can people connect with you and come and find you or say hi to you?
TheoneCrystal, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, G+, it's all the same. That's my handle. So LinkedIn.com/in/TheoneCrystal, Facebook.com/TheoneCrystal, whatever floats your boat, that's how you can find me.
Great. So folks, connect with Crystal Miller and wish you all a wonderful, wonderful long weekend. And we will
Thanks
talk
for
to
having
you
me, guys.
Week. Thanks. Thanks, bye. Crystal. Thanks, Lillian. Bye-bye.